The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only, should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. Divorce, custody battles, domestic violence. These cases unfold every day in family courts. But the stories don't end in the courtroom. The courtroom is just the beginning. This is Loveless Law, and I'm your host, Michelle Locke. I've spent 23 years practicing as a divorce attorney and presided over more than 5,000 cases as an associate court judge in Texas over a dedicated family violence court. I'm also the child of divorce, and after a 22-year marriage, I went through one of my own. When I say I've lived every side of family law, I mean it. Now I'm bringing that experience to the mic so we can unpack the legal battles fueled by love, lust, power, money, betrayal, and survival. Today, I'm joined by Jake Deptula, a seasoned victim advocate and podcaster who also happens to be my friend and executive producer. In our last two episodes, we walked through the rise and collapse of Denise Richards' marriage to Charlie Sheen, one of the most volatile custody battles Hollywood has ever seen. What started as a whirlwind romance quickly spiraled into years of legal warfare. Denise said she endured threats, violent outbursts, and escalating substance abuse behind closed doors, and she documented it all. She filed for divorce while pregnant with her second daughter, requested full custody, and sought court protection, all while being told to stay quiet to protect Charlie's image. Even after the divorce was finalized, the legal battles didn't stop. There were custody modifications, restraining orders, and financial disputes that lasted more than a decade. Through it all, Denise said her focus stayed the same, protecting her children. Eventually, she remarried, and at first it seemed like she found something steady. But in July 2025, that marriage ended too. And just like before, the headlines started, and they haven't stopped since. Things are about to get real, so let's get started. In the summer of 2017, Denise began dating Aaron Fipers. They met at his treatment center, Quantum 360 in Malibu, where Denise was seeking what she described as preventative DNA repair, aka anti-aging treatments. Aaron isn't a doctor, though. He's a part-time actor and businessman who claims to have created a healing space using something as basic as frequencies. According to his website, physics has shown that everything vibrates, i.e. has frequency. Starting over 25 years ago in Canada, Aaron began using various frequency-generating devices to help people reestablish homeostasis and balance their body, mind, and spirit. Something miraculous happened. Clients began to heal from all sorts of ailments, imbalances, just by being exposed to specific sets of frequencies. Aaron offered other types of alternative treatments, the kind that came with price tags in the thousands.
Denise later spoke to The Daily Dish about how she and Aaron started dating. She said that because Aaron worked with so many different people on a wide range of things, they naturally started talking about who they knew in common. Through those conversations, they realized they had similar interests. Then, according to Denise, they had sex in one of the rooms at Quantum 360 when no patients were there. They were inseparable after that.
At that time, Aaron was still legally married to Desperate Housewives actress Nicolette Sheridan, though they were no longer together. Very little is known about their relationship other than the fact that they were married for 6 months before Nicolette filed for divorce in 2016, citing irreconcilable differences. Their divorce wasn't finalized until 2 years later in August 2018. According to court documents obtained by People, neither Nicolette or Aaron were granted spousal support.
Michelle, you have dealt with so many cases of infidelity in family court. What are your thoughts about people who date before their divorce is finalized?
Ooh, this one's going to stir some controversy. So, a couple of things. Whether it's an affair or not, I don't know that I can say it was, because it looks like it started after he'd already separated from Nicolette. So I don't think that's technically an affair in the sense of an affair. I will tell you, there are people that absolutely are going to disagree with me, because so long as you're married, sleeping with someone else is an affair. That's just what people are going to say and think. And everyone has a right to think that. I know that even in some of the cases I have, if the divorce is dragging on and dragging on and dragging on, I'm not going to tell my clients to stop dating, because at that point, that's not the reason for the end of the marriage. And I've talked about this before in some of my clips, is that I think affairs oftentimes, serial cheaters are different, but I think affairs oftentimes are the symptom of a problem in the marriage, not necessarily the problem. if your spouse is stepping out, and it's a not a serial thing because that's a whole different issue, but maybe has a dalliance out once and you've been married for a long time and you know you're having issues, it may be a sign that you all need to self-reflect on what's going on in your marriage and whether you want to continue down that road. And so I don't ever tell my clients, hey, you need to not date at all. What I will tell them typically is be cautious. Don't spend a whole bunch of money on them because those can be waste claims for the community estate. Don't move them in while you're in the middle of a divorce because people have done that as well. And really, don't bring them around the kids if the divorce is still pending because that is likely to create some huge issues. Now, the difference is if your divorce is pending for 5 years, yeah, that's not reasonable to put your dating life on hold for 5 years. But if you're like 6 months into your divorce and you just moved out of the house, yeah, I probably wouldn't recommend it or advise it. But if you've been going through the divorce process for a while and you've met someone nice, you'd like to go out with them, make it casual, nothing serious, because the more serious you make it, the more money you spend, the more likely it is that your ex-spouse or soon-to-be ex-spouse is going to try and claw some of that money back. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I know people are going to be like, how dare you say that? But affairs and courts anymore, y'all, are just, they're not the big smoking gun where they're going to get punished. It's just not. Affairs these days happen on both sides of the spectrum. Both the men and women do it. I think before it's always painted as the men cheat, but I got to tell you, I think women cheat just as often. And it's just not that big of a deal for courts. It's just not. I mean, yes, if you're spending $20,000 flying your girlfriend or boyfriend to Hawaii, yeah, that's going to cause some problems. But I think you do it cautiously and look at the situation you're in for your divorce proceeding and then seek your attorney's input to say if it's okay or not.
That same month, August 2018, it was announced that Denise would be joining The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills as a main cast member. Erin ended up making several guest appearances on the show.
In September, the couple decided to get married, and naturally, they wanted it filmed for Real Housewives. On or around September 6th, they called celebrity event planner Mindy Weiss and said they wanted to get married on September 8th. Denise told People Erin really wanted to marry on September 8th because 8 means infinity. Mindy pulled it off, and Denise and Erin got married on the 8th in Malibu. Only a very small group of close friends and family were invited. After this ceremony, Denise released a statement saying, "I'm so happy to be officially married to the love of my life. I can't wait for everyone to go on this incredible journey with me this season on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's been a wild ride so far."
In February 2019, season 9 of Real Housewives premiered. At the end of the season, Denise revealed that Erin wanted to adopt her youngest daughter, Eloise. Denise had actually adopted Eloise as a newborn in 2011 as a single parent. The adoption doesn't appear to have gone through, though no official reason was given. Still, Erin refers to Eloise as his daughter.
Denise returned to Real Housewives as a main cast member for season 10. But after that, she chose to leave the show. Since then, she's continued to appear in episodes, just not as a regular. In 2022, Denise joined OnlyFans, a decision Erin supported. It ended up being a smart move as she's been able to make a lot of money. In January 2025, she starred in another reality series, Special Forces, World's Toughest Test. It was a competition-style show where celebrities take on intense training exercises led by a team of elite ex-Special Forces operatives.
Not long after Denise launched her own reality show, Denise Richards and the Wild Things, which premiered in March 2025. The series followed her as she juggled work and family life with Erin and her 3 daughters. During the first episode, Denise sat next to Erin and said, "I'm never getting divorced again. Even if we hate each other, I'm not going to fucking get divorced." Erin responded by saying that if it ever came to that, they could just get different homes. But he was confident it wouldn't come to that, saying they were not going to hate each other through their marriage. And Denise agreed. On July 7th, just months after Denise and Erin said they wouldn't get divorced, Erin filed for divorce. He cited irreconcilable differences and listed their date of separation as July 4th. According to Us Weekly, Erin asked for spousal support because he had zero income. Back in or around 2024, Erin closed down his treatment center. It's not entirely clear why, but we do know that Erin was involved in at least 2 lawsuits tied to the business. One was over an unpaid $200,000 loan.
The other was filed by a man named Rupert. In 2023, Rupert's wife, Alina, had been diagnosed with cancer. After trying multiple treatments without success, Alina went to see Aaron at his center. According to Rupert, Aaron told them he had a stem cell treatment that would either cure or significantly improve her condition. Rupert said Aaron claimed the treatment had a 98% success rate and that if it didn't work, he'd refund half the money. Confident in that promise, Alina and Rupert paid Aaron $126,000. But the treatment didn't help. In fact, the lawsuit claims Alina's tumors grew by 25%. When they asked Aaron to refund $63,000, Rupert said Aaron acknowledged the debt but proffered a series of excuses for his failure to pay. Alina passed away in 2024. After her death, Rupert followed up again, but Aaron still didn't repay them. So Rupert sued, and by the time the case was filed, Aaron had already shut down the clinic. Aaron denied the claims, and as far as we can tell, the lawsuit is still pending.
After shutting down his treatment center, Aaron stopped working altogether. He relied entirely on Denise to cover the bills. In his divorce petition, he estimated that Denise was making over $250,000 a month from OnlyFans, her reality shows, brand deals, and personal appearances. Aaron said he was still living with Denise and 14-year-old Eloise at the time of the divorce filing. He also shared a breakdown of his monthly expenses, which totaled more than $105,000. According to the filing, every month he spent $20,000 on clothing, $18,000 on rent, $15,000 for entertainment, another $15,000 on eating out, $10,000 on groceries, $8,000 on utilities, $7,000 on childcare, $5,000 on repairs, $5,000 on laundry, $1,500 in auto expenses, and $500 on his cell phone. Despite all of these expenses, Aaron did not list any assets. No property, no money in the bank, nothing.
I don't even know what to say.
I think it makes a lot of sense why Aaron was very happy that she decided to do OnlyFans. That's very clear.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty obvious, but holy cow. I mean, how do you have those kinds of expenses when you're not working? I mean, like, why would anyone have a $20,000 a month budget for clothing?
I think it's living well beyond your means. And I think that we kind of see what's going on here when it comes to his reliance on Denise and ultimately doing anything he can to support her making money. This is a very clear case to me of what's going on here. I know, and you know, that people go through ups and downs when it comes to their finances, generally speaking,
yep.
Right? Business does great in one quarter, does awful the next quarter, and you have to sort of balance that out. But most of the time, what I've seen, especially in any sort of celebrity or celebrity adjacent situations when it comes to finances, is that people start living based on the highest income that they make.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen is a great example of that. Charlie Sheen was making $2 million an episode. In a celebrity's mind, that's the money they will probably make forever. It's a weird psychology thing, but I know we've all gone through this. Some people are very frugal.
Because it's not.
It's not. It's not.
Right.
I think that we understand what earning potential is and we understand what earning reality is. And I think a lot of times in entertainment, people live in this bubble that it's always going to be this way forever. Talk to some of the major celebrities in the 80s or 90s. See where they're at now. See where their finances
yeah.
are. Most of the people have gotten so savvy in basically these past two decades to align themselves with brand deals and be the face of those brand deals. That didn't happen in the past.
Yeah.
Celebrities weren't making money domestically. They were making it overseas by doing commercials.
Yeah, weren't they like going to Japan for stuff?
Japan, Europe, Australia, every country out there was taking United States, American celebrities, North American celebrities, and using them to promote their products, but they wouldn't do them domestically. That all changed.
Why is that?
It was seen as a tarnish on the celebrity's image before agencies got involved, before they realized, well, internationally, they're a bigger celebrity than they are here domestically. And I think also, too, social media really had a major pull in that when people realized they could mm-hmm. make money. And we know where celebrity culture is now. It's not as elevated. It's very transparent and exposed. It doesn't have the same cachet as it used to because we're oversaturated with content.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just be fair. Where her career was at the time or where she was, Denise Richards was a known actor within the space. And when she did Real Housewives, That actually gave them a major amount of cachet, in my opinion. But then a lot of actors followed suit. A lot of people followed suit, realized this is money. This is juggernaut. Not only doing brand deals, but imagine somebody of a caliber of, let's say, in the 80s or 90s. Let's say, what if that's like, not to say that Denise Richards was the same caliber or the same popularity, but Right. Imagine if Julia Roberts did an OnlyFans in the 90s. That's literally what that would have been.
Oh my God.
Like.
Or after Pretty Woman? Holy 100%. Cow.
So you do these things, right? And you realize how much money can be made. But when you do this within the context of a relationship, I think we're kind of seeing where the reliance is and where this is probably going to end up.
But it sounds to me like he was living based on what Denise was making, not him.
Well, I think that he was living on what he was making before. I don't think his lifestyle changed, but I think he assumed when his income went down, basically that Denise was able to fill in the gap for the income he wasn't making because they were married. And that's what he thought.
So it raises to me in his divorce filing, what I would call is that's a budget. Mm-hmm. In order for us to get that kind of information from someone, he filed what we call like a budget with the court to delineate what his expenses were. And as lawyers, when we look at our clients' budgets, we look at what's reasonable, what's not reasonable. And I know I've gone back with some clients and said, no, you probably need to change this. This is not accurate. This amount is too high. And part of the reason people will make it higher than what it should be is so they get more in temporary spousal support. And so I don't know if he was trying to ratchet up his expenses. Because during a divorce, oftentimes the goal is for the court to put everyone on equal footing because you're still married and it's still an obligation, right? And so everyone's kind of on equal footing. And so I'm guessing for him, it was probably an attempt at a money grab to get his share of whatever it is she was making, whether appropriate or inappropriate. Just a little over a week after Aaron filed for divorce, Denise filed a restraining order. She told the court that Aaron had been abusive and controlling throughout their marriage. In the documents, Denise listed several specific incidents of alleged abuse, starting with January 17th of 2022. On that day, she said Aaron became paranoid that several potted plants at his office contained listening devices. In front of a family member, he allegedly started striking her in the eye, calling her a fucking bitch. Denise said Aaron then used his own equipment to try and treat the injury. She submitted a photo of the black eye and said it took a full month to heal. She wrote in the petition, Aaron insisted I tell others that I'd walked into a piece of his equipment stored on the building's balcony, which was untrue.
Denise said she often had to use makeup to cover the bruises Aaron left on her body. She included a red carpet photo from June 2nd, 2023, where she had forgotten to cover the bruise on her arm.
Then, on April 12, 2025, during a trip to Chicago for a fan convention, Denise said Aaron got upset and started calling her names. She said he screamed, I found some shit on your phone, before grabbing her head with both hands and forcefully squeezing. Denise said it felt like he was going to crush her skull and that she frantically pleaded with him to stop. He only let go when someone knocked on the hotel room door.
During an April 25, 2025 incident, Denise said she told Aaron he couldn't stay at her townhouse anymore and that he needed to leave. As she unpacked from a trip, she locked the doors for safety. But according to Denise, Aaron climbed onto the second floor balcony, pushed through the screen, and entered the room she was in. Once again, she said Aaron aggressively approached her and grabbed the back of her head by her hair and pushed her on the ground. Then he put his knee on her back so she couldn't get up. Denise said that was something he would do often. Denise said Aaron screamed in her face, and she told him he was going to kill her if he did not get up. When she threatened to call the police, Aaron allegedly responded the way he always did, by saying, watch them try and take me away. They have no idea who they're dealing with, and you have no idea who you are dealing with. When he refused to leave, Denise said she felt unsafe and left the home herself.
Denise said that in May, she was at her townhouse packing for another trip when she told Aaron he couldn't come with her. She claimed that's when he grabbed her by the back of her head, by her hair, and slammed her into the ground. He screamed, you are not canceling my flight. I'm going with you, and I do not trust you. Denise said she told him to get off of her because he was going to kill her, and that he eventually let go after a long struggle.
Later that same month, Denise said Aaron hacked into her computer while she was recovering from surgery. According to her, he went into her settings, synced her iMessages to the laptop through her iCloud account, and downloaded everything, including her private text messages. Then he took photos of the messages right off her screen. Denise said Aaron also transferred those messages to his own laptop and then woke her up screaming, "You fucking bitch." Denise said he later attacked her while she was on the toilet. She wrote, "He smashed me on the top of my head with the palm of his hand while screaming at me repeatedly, 'Give me your fucking phone.'" According to Denise, Aaron wanted to access her phone because he was unable to download her WhatsApp messages on her laptop. She said she was able to de-escalate the situation by telling him that security might show up if he kept yelling.
Denise said that on the 4th of July, Denise told Aaron he wasn't allowed in her townhouse anymore and his family had to move out of the home. She wrote, "Aaron repeatedly got within 2 inches of my face and screamed at me degrading profanities, including calling me a cunt, whore, and a piece of shit." She said, "Aaron repeatedly grabbed my left arm tightly in an aggressive manner. I told Aaron repeatedly that he needed to stay away from me and that he was going to hurt me. I was afraid that Aaron may kill me. I am 5'4", and Aaron is 6'2", and weighs more than 200 pounds.
Denise said that on July 5th, Aaron came by her townhouse with his father and again began screaming obscenities at her. She claims he chased her and grabbed both of her arms forcefully. He then pushed and dragged her to the ground. She landed on the stairs, which caused her immense pain. Denise wrote, "He threatened that I would disappear if I called the police, and that he'd hack my cell phone and iCloud account and release all the information on the internet." She said he only left when she was about to hit call with 911 on her phone. But when he left, he took her purse, driver's license, and suitcase, which had her passport in it.
I'm going to interject for just a second. What she is saying is all the hallmarks of someone that's been an abusive man for so long. I mean, the go-to is you take their method of leaving away from them. And so when you take the purse, driver's license, suitcase, and had the passport in it, he is literally trying to trap her. And just reading it makes my blood boil. In her request for a protective order, Denise asked that Aaron be required to return her laptop, which at some point he allegedly took. She also asked that he be prohibited from using, delivering, copying, printing, or disclosing any text messages, emails, photos, notes, or other content from her cell phone or laptop or any other electronic device. In the end, the court granted Denise's request for a temporary restraining order. Aaron was ordered to stay at least 100 yards away from Denise, her home, her car, and her workplace. He was also barred from possessing firearms or body armor. The body armor is a weird thing, prohibiting body armor, which must be something specific in California statutes. In addition, the judge also ordered that Aaron return Denise's laptop and not distribute any media that involved Denise's intimate body parts.
After Denise was awarded the protection order, Aaron denied the accusations of abuse, telling Us Weekly, "Let me be unequivocally clear. I've never physically or emotionally abused Denise or anyone." He added, "These accusations are completely false and deeply hurtful. Denise and I, like many couples, have faced our share of challenges, but on any suggestion of abuse is categorically untrue. I have always tried to approach our marriage with love, patience, and respect. I ask for privacy as we navigate personal matters, and I hope that the public and media will refrain from spreading harmful and baseless claims."
Yeah, don't listen to anything she says about me, but go ahead and listen to everything I'm going to say about her, including that she was cheating. Then on July 20th, just days after Denise was granted a temporary restraining order, Aaron sent a long message to a group of close friends and family. According to the Daily Mail, he reportedly sent it via text around 10 a.m. The letter began, "To our family and close friends, this is the hardest letter I've ever had to write. I just got some of my contacts back after being without my cell phone since the 4th of July. I'm reaching out today, not in anger, but in heartbreak. As a man, a husband, a son, a brother, and a father who has spent years loving, supporting, and protecting his family. I love my wife more than words can ever fully express. That has never changed, but the recent public accusations made against me are not only false, they are devastating. I have never, ever physically harmed my wife, and I did not give her a black eye. I have only ever stepped in to protect her or others, including separating her from physically attacking her daughter, always coming from a place of care and concern."
Aaron continued, The effects of these allegations have reached beyond me. My elderly parents, ages 83 and 84, and my brother, who have devoted themselves to caring for our daughter Eloise and Denise's animals and supporting our family without pay for over 3 years, are now being targeted and publicly shamed. They live in unbearable conditions. No hot water, no gas, and no air conditioning in 100-plus degree heat, and no financial support to buy basic supplies. Yet they continue to serve with love and loyalty. This is a clear and present danger to all of us. Privately, I've wrestled the painful truth that Denise has been involved in an ongoing affair with her special forces instructor, Rudy Reyes, something I confronted her about earlier this year. She begged me not to leave, saying it was nothing and that she only loved me. Then she denied it all, even the explicit messages I found. Despite her promise to stop, more lies and shocking evidence emerged. The fact that his family is living in destitution speaks volumes.
This one kind of blows me away because to me, he sounds like a complete gaslighter.
100%.
Like he's not taking accountability for anything. It's everyone else's fault. And somehow Denise's fault for his parents? Can someone explain that one to me?
Who is this a clear and present danger to all of us? Who is this public menace that he is referring to? That almost dives into conspiracy theory.
Well, it makes me sound like he's lost it because Denise Richards is a clear and present danger to all of us, especially considering we know her past and what she did for Bob and Max when Brooke kept falling off the wagon. Like I read this going, wow, boy, has his narrative been spun.
Her character becomes more and more unquestionable through the toxic men that she has been married to.
Yeah, I she is probably a really nice lady.
Yeah.
But man, her picker sucks.
100%. And we haven't even dove into the fact that he is using a potential or alleged affair in a way to excuse a lot of these things.
And what I love about this is she had an affair. And this is the classic, and this drives me nuts as a woman. Women are so often judged by our sexuality. Is, well, let's paint her as a whore that destroys all of her credibility.
Yeah.
And that's what drives me absolutely nuts, is why does it always have to go to who a woman is sleeping with? Why? President Bill Clinton could apparently sleep with whoever he wanted to. I mean, but it is such a double standard. Yeah. And that's what the abusers go for. She's a whore. I mean, in my own marriage, I dealt with it. After I lost 118 pounds, I was told that the only reason that I lost the weight was to go attract men for sex. That the only reason I dressed nice was to go attract sex. The only reason I put on makeup and did my hair was to attract sex. Those were actual comments from him. And I was dumbfounded because I got to tell you, I lost weight because I want to be around for my kids. I lost weight because I needed to get weight off my joints. I lost weight because I was tired of being a whale. I lost weight. I dressed nice because I couldn't fit into clothes off a rack for years. For years, I didn't feel sexy in anything I wore. And so for the first time in my life, I can go shop and buy a size 8 and buy a size 10. It infuriates me. I know I do it because it makes me feel good. I couldn't give two craps about what anyone else thinks. And nor am I doing it to attract sex. I'm not dating. I'm not doing anything. But I do it because I want to. But because my ex didn't like it, he turned into something nasty and sexual, which is what this guy's doing here. It just lights me on fire.
As it should. As it absolutely should.
Mm. On July 4th, a simple act, ordering food for our daughter Eloise, led to an unthinkable discovery. Denise accused me of using her card, and in the confusion, my phone disappeared. After searching for over 20 hours, and being physically attacked when I asked for it back, I eventually found it smashed inside a trash bag, hidden beneath rotting garbage and litter. When I asked why, she denied it completely. That same night, she texted me saying she was filing for divorce. I filed instead at 12:01 a.m. that morning. No, you didn't. You sent it to the district clerk's office and they wouldn't accept it till the next morning anyways. That's a whole different story. Since then, I've experienced stalking, an AirTag placed on my car, been denied access to my personal belongings, and watched my elderly parents become frightened and mistreated simply because they supported me and helped take care of Denise's animals, her daughters, and our home. This isn't just a relationship breaking down. It's a cry for help. What? WTF. WTF. WTF.
I am trying to find the words to describe the universe by which Denise is the villain.
Denise was the provider for everyone in his family.
100%.
And that's not reasonable. It's not what a man should do. If you've got stay-at-home kids, you're a stay-at-home parent, fine. That's not what he was. You work. Sorry, this really incenses me.
I say this with love, not judgment. Denise needs intervention. For nearly a decade, she has struggled with an addiction to Vicodin, which she jokingly calls vitamin D or white chestnuts, mixed with Adderall and tequila. Some of you know this has been an issue for over 20 years. She's no longer eating real meals, and I've witnessed her pass out from substances, putting herself and others in danger, including while driving with our daughter. I never wanted to share this publicly, but the damage is no longer just within our home. It's hurting everyone who loves her, supports her, and continues to believe in the best parts of her. My mother has given over 13,000 hours of unpaid dog care alone, saving Denise nearly $327,000. And yet we are being treated as if we are the problem. We are struggling just to survive. Well, she flies Rudy to private hotels under the guise of work trips. That statement gives you everything you want to know.
Yep.
We are struggling to survive while she flies Rudy to private hotels under the guise of work trips. Meaning, Rudy is getting the best part of Denise's bank account while he is getting nothing because of the person he is.
Yep. He's mad because she's out being happy.
100%.
I ask each of you from a place of love and truth to pray for Denise, to pray for healing, for clarity, and for her to get the help she so desperately needs, and to protect our family, especially my elderly parents, from the false narratives being spread. I remain open to reconciliation, healing, and truth, but I cannot stand by in silence as the people I love are being harmed publicly and privately while the truth is buried beneath a story that simply isn't real. Thank you for hearing my heart. Please reach out if you need clarity. I'm here, and I'm still holding hope, not just for myself, but for all of us. With love and respect, Aaron.
After sending out the letter, Aaron sat down with the Daily Mail for an exclusive interview where he went into extreme detail about Denise's alleged affair and substance use.
As the alleged affair, Aaron said he first suspected something was off in April 2025. According to Aaron, Denise was acting distant, so he checked her phone. He went into deleted texts and found over 100 messages between Denise and a man named Rudy, who is a coach on Special Forces World's Toughest Test, the reality show Denise was on in early 2025. Aaron claimed the texts included plans for hotel hookups, as well as explicit photos and videos from both Denise and Rudy. The Daily Mail published screenshots of these texts, videos, and photos. Some were not blurred out, like one of Denise bending over nothing but a thong and a cowboy hat. Holy cow. In Texas, this may be considered revenge porn and a crime because he accessed something he wasn't entitled to have and then published it to other sources. And that was done solely for the purpose of embarrassing her. If this doesn't show anyone who Aaron is, I don't know what else would.
We've talked about public humiliation before and used as a tactic. And Denise, so far in the narrative that we've explored in this, and also her marriage to Charlie Sheen that we discussed about, you can pretty much get a pretty clear picture of the character of Denise. Yes, she may have some issues. Yes, she may be dealing with a lot. But you look at it, why do you think she may have these issues? Why do you think she may be dealing with these things? What kind of behavior has forced her to be in a position where she needs things to cope? Using that as playing the devil's advocate, but those are real things that we have to ask ourselves.
I got to tell you, I look at this and this is, to me, it's a, here's what I'm going to do unless you pay me to go away.
Aaron told the Daily Mail when he confronted Denise about the text with Rudy, she promised to stop. She even offered to let him check her phone anytime to rebuild trust. But according to Aaron, she resumed contact with Rudy. He found out when he checked her phone on July 4th. He said he started taking pictures of the text on his phone, but Denise caught him and smashed his phone.
When speaking with the Daily Mail, Aaron also said his relationship with Denise had deteriorated well before their split. According to him, things got worse at the start of 2025 partly because of what he described as Denise's growing dependence on prescription pills and tequila. He claimed, "She's got a real problem with pills. She mixes it too with booze and she stays up all night. She's there on her computer and taking stuff. Then she hides the bottles. It's gotten out of hand. I'm really concerned." He also stated, "She buys them in bottles of 500 pills. I don't know where she gets them from, but she always has them. I don't know what the market rate for those are, but it's 10, 20, 30, 50 each a pill. You do the math. A lot of money is going out of the window for that." Let's talk about controlled substances for a second. Most states have really cracked down on doctors and issuing controlled substances. And he said that she had a growing dependence on prescription pills. And if it's something that's an addictive, it's going to be a controlled substance as a general rule. And doctors nowadays are so limited in what they're prescribing. I don't know any quantity of prescription pills that are super regulated, that would be like the addictive ones that they're worried about, that are issued in 500 quantities. They're just not. You're lucky if you get 30 or 60. Now, I understand everyone's going to say in Hollywood, you can get whatever you want. That may be true. You know what's interesting?
What's
is that for him, it's about the money.
100%.
Not about what it may be doing to her body. Not about anything else. The very last thing he says in that statement is, that's a lot of money.
It really is all focused around the financial.
It is how much she should pay him. That is the bottom line on it. What's interesting, though, is whether that gets used in court, right? Because your thought is, well, maybe Aaron's people can use that in court as some kind of evidence. I actually think it's the contrary. I think Denise's people will use that in court to show who he really is. Because I would suspect they're going to be able to show it's not true, not accurate, and either a lie or a complete exaggeration with some scintilla of proof or evidence. And so if I was Denise's legal team, I'd be marking that up and making that exhibit A, B, and C.
Following the Daily Mail article's release, Denise's attorney issued a statement saying Denise would not be responding to false allegations in a public forum and would instead address the alleged abuse in court. The attorney pointed out that Aaron was under a restraining order that prohibited him from disseminating private data from Denise's phone or laptop, yet that's exactly what he was doing.
Then, on August 3rd, Aaron called police and reported that Denise had shown up at his home unannounced. Us Weekly reported that the sources close to Aaron, so take this with a grain of salt, claimed Denise went to the house where he was living with his parents. It was the same house Denise and Aaron had shared before she moved out. According to the source, Denise was there to retrieve one of her dogs. When Aaron saw her, he called 911 since the restraining order was still active. Aaron's parents were inside the house at the time. They said Denise tried every locked door, slammed on the windows, and yelled for someone to let her in. They said they were frightened and didn't know what to do. Eventually, a member of Aaron's family let her inside. Once inside, Denise told them they needed to leave. When police arrived, no arrests were made as they found no evidence that a crime had occurred. After this incident, Denise's attorney released another statement. Denise did not violate a restraining order. On August 3rd, 2025, after confirming that Aaron was not present in her home, Denise entered the home to retrieve her dogs after learning that Aaron had put down one of her other dogs without her knowledge or permission.
At the time, no further details were shared about the dog that was allegedly put down. But a few days later, Aaron told People his side of the story. He claimed Denise didn't have a relationship with their pets and said she had ulterior motives for showing up on August 3rd. According to Aaron, Denise has never interacted with the animals in 2 years and never has wanted knowledge or wanted to give her permission to any type of care for the animals. A source close to Aaron added that the dog, who was euthanized, had been in declining health. The source told People, Melanie, a sweet elder dog who Aaron loved, had late-stage cancer and was suffering when he took her for help. The vet insisted the few days she had left being in pain were better met with putting her to sleep and off to heaven. It was a painful decision. To say she was put down is hurtful.
On August 8th, the court held a hearing to decide whether Denise's temporary restraining order should remain in place. In the end, the judge extended the order for another month. But something unexpected came up during the hearing. Denise's attorneys told the court she still hadn't received her laptop. Aaron and his attorneys claimed he didn't have it. But Denise's legal team pushed back. saying there was video footage showing Aaron with the laptop in his possession. They didn't present the footage in court at this hearing, and while we cannot tell from what has been reported thus far as to whether the recording was played for the court on September 8th, the court did issue an order requiring Aaron to return Denise's laptop and old cell phone. His lawyers indicated that he was going to file a statement with the court on September 9th to the effect that he didn't take any of the alleged devices. According to an article in People magazine, the hearing on Denise's restraining order request was pushed back again another month from the September 8th scheduled hearing. Despite being pushed back, the court ordered that Denise have access to one of the couple's residences on September 13th to retrieve her mother's and her own personal property, including the dogs, while Aaron was ordered to stay 100 yards away from the home. Aaron was also provided access on September 15th to the couple's townhouse and office, and Denise was ordered to ensure that the spaces were accessible at the time to Aaron. Aaron did file an over 200-page response to Denise's allegations. Hopefully, I'll be able to get my hands on that filing and give y'all an update on the additional claims, allegations, and defenses that Aaron is asserting. This could get interesting. That's the up-to-date information for now. I don't have any final thoughts because this one is going to be, let's see what happens, because this one isn't done getting ugly. Thank you for joining me on today's episode. I'll be back with a brand new episode. And remember, there are lots of four-letter words in family law, and fair isn't one of them. Until then, I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love, Lust, Law. Love, Lust, Law is hosted by me, Michelle Locke. Jake Deptula is executive producer. Haley Gray is producer, writer, and researcher. Jared Landis is sound editor and mixer. Want to reach out to me? You can. You can email me at hello@michellelocke.com. Want to find out what I'm up to? You also can on Instagram by following me at Attorney Michelle Locke. Just remember, Michelle is spelled with one L, and you can thank my mother, Margot, for that.